Hello, everyone. Welcome to week two of the Data Training for Advocacy course. I think we're going to go ahead and get started. This week, we are going to be looking at major global funders of HIV and their data. But before we really want to get started, I did just want to go over a little bit of course logistics again and make sure everybody has been able to access the course, whether you've had any difficulties accessing it through Engage. Or handling the assignments or any of those sorts of things. So I'd just like to open up quickly to everyone here on the webinar to see if anybody has any issues that they've been having accessing the course. Also, has everybody been added to the WhatsApp group? Who wants to be on the WhatsApp group? Seeming like everyone is getting in then. We've only gotten a few assignments turned in through Engage, so please do remember to turn in assignments through the Engage platform, because that's how you get credit for them. Austin and I will be going through those that have been submitted this week. And remember that to get the course certificates, you have to complete all of the assignments. In order to get the course certificate at the end of the course, all the assignments have to be completed and submitted through Engage. That's the only way we're accepting them this round. Reminder that we also do office hours every Thursday from 1600 to 1800 DAR, from 3 to 5 in Joburg, and 9 to 11 in New York. If there's any questions that people have about issues that they're having with the course, anything that they want to go into more depth on, any further discussions on any element of the course, Austin and I are available during those hours specifically, dedicating time just to really look at whatever problems people have or being open for discussion on the course, any of the material. If you can use the WhatsApp group, if you want everybody involved, otherwise you can reach out to either Austin or myself directly. And we'll handle it directly. But if there's no other issues on course logistics, then I'm gonna move on. I get one question here just quickly on, can you provide instructions on how to access the exercise from the website? Yes, let me just go ahead and share my screen real quick. Oops. Okay, so hopefully you can see this. So this is what the main Engage site looks like. If you go to courses, and then you get into the course itself. Once you're in the one of the components, so the module, this is last week's, the introduction and data concepts, there's this link here to download the take-home exercise. Clicking on that, you'll get, you know, just a Word document downloaded. Once you've opened that, put in your responses and answers and done everything that you need to do, you can save it and then submit it here. So when you you just click on browse, find it on your computer, and then upload it, and that will submit the assignment. Does that answer the question? Any other questions on that front? Okay, Then so as I said, we're going to be talking about major global funders of HIV and their data this week. And I'm having trouble accessing the chat again.
There we go. Ryan, I can just watch the chat if that's
perfect.
Easier.
Thank you. So major global funders and their data. And so we're going to cover a little bit about who the major global funders are, but we're going to focus today primarily on the global fund itself. And I want to introduce this. We're not, as I said, we're not going to talk a lot about it, but there's, I think it's important to put in context who the different funders of HIV are in each country. So these are looking at data from UNAIDS about who is putting in the resources for the HIV response. And what you see there is in red, you've got other international, in the sort of beige color, you've got United States bilateral, which is basically PEPFAR. In the darker green, you've got the Global Fund. And then in the light green, you've got domestic, both public and private resources. So either government and private sector resources. And I think it's important just to keep this in mind. This is for all low and middle income countries, that, you know, there's three major, you know, individual funders of the programs of HIV services. We focus a lot on PEPFAR and we focus a lot on Global Fund, but I think it is just important to keep in mind that domestic resources also make up an enormous amount of the pot of funds that are available for the HIV response. And this changes a lot, of course, country to country. And we'll talk about this when we get to domestic resource tracking a little bit more in a couple of weeks. You know, so for Malawi, in according to the PEPFAR strategic direction summaries from 2019, Malawi domestic resources are only about 2.5% of the response. In Tanzania, the SDS doesn't credit the Tanzanian government with really any funding of the response. And then in Zimbabwe, they credit it at about 18%. We're going to talk more about what that means in a couple of weeks, but I think it's important to just keep in mind in calculating these figures, there's a lot of assumptions that are being made about how resources should be tracked. And that has bearing on how we think about the value of those resources and who is important to be tracking for those resources and what are the biggest and most important pots of funds that we should be paying attention to. So before we get more directly into the Global Fund data, I just want to touch briefly on you know, three basic big categories of data that are generally available from all funders. That's budget data, it's expenditure data, and it's monitoring and evaluation data or performance data. And what's important about these is that they're more or less an inherent part of how all funders operate, such that all funders are going to have some form of data available on each of these. Here we're looking at an example of a little bit of budget data from Malawi's Global Fund grant that was in effect from 2012 to 2014. So it's a little bit of an older grant. And we're looking at some of the partners who got funding. We're looking at the funding levels, the types of entities. And so I pose these questions, you know, in terms of, as civil society, why, you know, what do we get out of looking at budget data? And what's useful from budget information and looking at budgets to inform advocacy? And so I'm opening that up as a question to the group. You know, what do you think is most important that we can take away from budget data when we look at it, either here where we're seeing it from, you know, who the recipients are, or here where we see a little bit more of line items like human resources, infrastructure and equipment, those sorts of things. what do you take away from this that's really important for informing advocacy efforts? Just unmute and speak. Don't be shy. I see a couple unmuted.
Hello?
Go ahead.
This is Kenneth from Uganda. I think such budget data helps us understand the priorities of government or development partners.
Okay, the priorities.
Hello, everyone. I think, yes, priorities, but also looking into where the gap is. And what is the gap? And that's where the civil society organization come in for advocacy to bridge the gap.
Explain a little bit more in the gap. What do you mean by the gap?
So for instance, I'll look on to what is the required budget, the budget that is required for the HIV responses, and I'll look into what has been budgeted, what resources are available, and what is missing, so that we can, the previous speaker has said, so comparing to these priorities, then we can take a role of advocating, negotiating on the probably reallocation of the budget, but also mobilizing more resources to cover the gap.
Yep. Anyone else?
Yes, this is Huntington Wans from Uganda. I think such information is helpful. Would help civil society to track how much has been allocated so that you can do a follow-up. For instance, if I see line 5, which talks about medicines and pharmaceuticals products, I would know that so much was allocated, and then I would be able to follow up and find out if, for instance, 65% of the money was spent. If 65% of the money was spent on medicines and pharmaceuticals, then in the local health facilities, or the reverse is true. Thank you.
Yep. Anyone else? I think we've hit on all the points, right? I think all of this is right. So I think there's also, you know, just in terms of going back a slide, you know, who's getting the money as well is important to think through, because I think that also tells us, you know, where should we focus some of our advocacy? Is the advocacy that we need to play, you know, in terms of looking at this grant, who is important to be targeting our advocacy at, right? You know, we know that there's some money going into NGOs here. We see only about 2.1% of the grant is going into NGOs. We see a little bit of money going into PSI and to VETA. But, you know, there's not a lot of money going in there. But it does tell us that those entities should also be responsible for doing things. It enables us to follow up with NAC or with any of the district councils who are supposed to be implementing some of this program, or who were supposed to be implementing some of this programming, to see what are they actually doing with that money? Are they putting it in the ways that they're supposed to be putting it? I think on Ken's point about the priorities is absolutely right. And also on the point made about funding the gaps. When we look at, you know, what did they choose in this grant to fund and who did they choose in this grant to fund, that communicates the priorities of the decision makers and of the funders. And so here, you know, we see in this particular grant, only 2% of the resources were going into human resources for health, while there's, you know, almost 6% in, you know, technical assistance and training. You know, that's a big difference. And is that, you know, the way that we would really want this grant to be structured? And we can, going to those points, we can really start intervening on that when we see the budgets being developed out of whack. Or in ways that we disagree with. So I think there's a lot of value there. In terms of expenditure data, I think it touches on a lot of the similar issues. But expenditure data, I think everybody knows, is, you know, following through on what's actually been spent in comparison to what was originally put in the budget. And so, I mean, again, what, you know, I asked this question, you know, why do we care? What's important and different about tracking expenditures versus tracking budget information? What different information does expenditure data give us that the budget information may not? Anyone?
Yes, what I've learned that on the expenditure data, that when you see on the component that we have, it is quite different from the on the signed amount. That, for instance, on the HIV, the amount which was signed is quite different to how much which was disbursed. So this is give me the picture that there is a difference on the planning issue that was intended. Compared to the expenditure that was being disbursed. Thank you.
Yep. Anyone else?
Yeah. Blessing from Joined Alliance. The expenditure data basically is of paramount importance because it shows us the burn rate, and again, it informs decision makers on why the burn rate is low, or why the burn rate is fast. And for instance, if the burn rate at HIV is fast, then the same strategies can be used on other components. So basically, decision making can be drawn from the expenditure data with regards to burn rate.
Do you want to explain what burn rate is?
Yeah. So when we talk about burn rate, we are saying you are given, let's say, on HIV data. The committed amount, the dispersed amount is 142 million. So this will be expected to be spent on a certain period of time. And when that period of time has lapsed, we then go to the drawing board and say, did we manage to expend? Did we manage to use all the resources that were dispersed on this period of time? So burn rate is speaking to the amount spent at a certain period of time or in a quarter.
Yep. Others?
Hello.
Go ahead.
Hello?
Go ahead.
Yeah, and if for me, Yeah, probably was not realistic because I'm wondering why low burn rate. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. And yes. Yes. Why low the amount that was dispersed is low. So I'll also look into the plans because it's obvious that the some of the activities will be affected because of less money that has been received, because this money has been committed, but it does not, the committed amount of money does not mean that all has been dispersed. But looking into the dispersed money means that there are some of the activities that will be affected because the amount that has been dispersed is less than what was committed.
Yep. You were breaking up there a little bit, but I think we got everything.
Hello.
Go ahead.
Walter, I'm sorry, we can't hear you very well.
Walter, I'm afraid we can't hear anything you're saying. Okay, well, we're gonna go back.
I don't know if you can hear me now.
Oh, we can hear you now. Great. Go ahead. Well, now we can. So I think we've hit on the points around expenditure data, just a little bit on the language that's on the slide here. So in global fund terms, the signed amount means how much was the total grant worth. The committed amount is how much money has been really dedicated already, where plans are in place, the funding is in place, all of the resources are really there and have been budgeted for and been set. And then the disbursed amount is how much money the Global Fund has sent into the country, right? Other funders use different language for this. In PEPFAR world, these are sometimes called obligations and outlays. The committed amount is an obligation. An outlay is a disbursed amount. It doesn't really matter. It's the same concept. But I think the points that people have made are the really important ones, right? Of is there expenditure data allows us to see, is there underspending going on? Is the burn rate very slow or is the burn rate very high? And because that tells us to ask some questions about, are we following the budget? Was the budget inappropriately developed? Is the budget going to be able to hold, or is the budget going to fail because we're going through the resources too fast or too slow? It's basically a rough way to look at how the grant is proceeding. One of the other things that is available with good quality expenditure data, which we don't always have access to, is looking at which particular programs are proceeding as they're supposed to be, right? So we looked at the, you know, the line items in the budget up here, right? You could see differential expenditures if we had good expenditure data to see, look, are we really spending all of the money on the technical assistance and the training the way that we had originally budgeted them? Are we overspending on the technical assistance and training compared to what we expected to spend? And so that money is going to come out of somewhere else, right? Those are important things to keep in mind, because sometimes individual line items, the grant overall may look like it's going fine, and that the burn rate is perfectly acceptable or right on target. But when you look at individual lines, you may see that some programs have been cut entirely or are not being funded. You could also look at, you know, if we had good quality expenditure data, are there individual partners that aren't spending their money the way that they're supposed to be spending their money, either too fast, too slow, or on the right activities. The last one we're going to talk about briefly is this monitoring and evaluation piece, which I think everybody is obviously familiar with the idea of why it's important to track performance and have performance data. I think, you know, the more interesting...
Ben, can I say something?
Oh, go ahead.
Yes, looking at the previous slide, which has what was signed, what was committed, and what was disbursed. Yes, that's right. I'm looking at signed amount is 339 million, committed is 227, and then disbursed is 142. How do we track the difference within, if there's a difference between what was signed and what was, and then the difference between what was finally disbursed, how do we track the difference? Because I see a lot of money remains in between. Who accounts for that, and how do we know at the end of the day where the difference goes? Thank you.
Yep, and we're going to show that in Austin's going to be demonstrating the website, the Global Fund's website, to look at those data in just a couple of minutes. So that will really go over, you know, how we see that signed amount, the committed amounts, and the dispersed amounts. I mean, I think just the part of the point on this is, you know, sometimes the signed amounts are for an entire grant period. So they're going to extend longer than oftentimes when, in the context of the Global Fund we're talking here, you know, the grants usually cover 3, maybe a little bit longer in terms of years, depending on sort of which era of the Global Fund you're looking at. They were usually either 3 or 5 year grants, but they would only submit a budget up front for 2 years, right? And so that's where you get into some of this initial differentiation. When you come to the end of a grant is where you should see all 3 of those lines really line up, that all the signed, committed, and disbursed amounts should really be in alignment at the end of the grant. And that's just part of trying to understand where you are in the grant, where the data are from. But we'll talk about that in a couple of minutes when we go through the Global Fund's website. So for performance data, as I was saying, I think everybody understands the importance of tracking performance. For the Global Fund, this comes in the form of the key performance indicators. For PEPFAR, everybody's familiar with the MER, the TXNew, and HTS-PAS, and all of those sort of indicators. But I think, you know, the question I want to ask is, why for civil society is it important for us to know what's being measured in terms of how the performance metrics are being set up? And how do you think measuring changes the results that you're going to see or changes the program that you're going to see. If it does. Think about this a little in the, you know, in addressing, say, an HIV prevention grant. Let's say I was putting together an HIV prevention grant. And that's supposed to be a general HIV prevention grant. That's supposed to cover all aspects of prevention. But then I tell the partners, there's two indicators that I want to see on this. I want to see how many people have gotten medical male circumcisions, and I want to see how many pregnant people have been given medications to prevent mother-to-child transmission. Those are the two things that I'm going to track. What is that going to do to how you're going to program this HIV prevention funding?
Hello. I think based on this, it depends first on the organization, what type of the tool that they are using on tracking or on measure those indicators. For instance, others, they use logical framework analysis, and others, they use outcome mapping. So it depends on that. So if they're using, let's say, the outcome mapping, it means that they will be tracking on the behavioral changing starting from the initial state, and there they can make a measuring change of the result that has been addressed. Thank you.
Ryan, others? I think the point I would make on this is just in terms of, you know, to one, there's the point made, right, which is how the system is going to monitor performance is really important for understanding, are we really making progress or are we not making progress, right? If we just have a tally of systems versus whether we're tracking based on increases, let's say, in access to these services from a baseline that we have established. That's gonna tell us a different thing about the performance than if we just say how many people got circumcisions, right? Because you may have not actually changed anything at all, but even if you increased funding, if you don't know what your baseline was beforehand. I think the other point I would make is to the point that was made earlier about budgets on communicating the priorities of the funder. And communicating the priorities of the funder in this context, I said I wanted a general purpose HIV prevention program, right? But then I told you I'm only going to measure circumcisions and I'm only going to measure PMTCT. Well, what does that leave out? It leaves out anything related to key populations programming and prevention programming, condom distribution, adolescent girls and young women programming, structural interventions, those sorts of things. You know, and so when these systems that are put in place, the frameworks for how data are going to be collected and measured, address or are communicated to the partners are being informed, this is the important thing that I need to be monitoring, and the progress I'm gonna be, the performance of my grant is going to be determined on the circumcisions and the PMTCT, whether I do some key populations prevention programming, whether I do condom distribution, whether I do any of those other things, they're not going to measure me based on that. So I'm going to deprioritize those, right? And so that's why I would say it's really important to think about how do we get involved in assessing and determining what's being measured and what's part of the monitoring system and what's part of the indicators on which partners are going to be monitored and what's not part of those. Does that all make sense? Hopefully. So here we're going to turn just to looking, those are the three big categories, right? So budget data, expenditure data, performance data, those are the big three that any funder is going to have data on. Now we're going to turn to looking at the Global Fund itself. I'm going to go through here a little bit quickly. So the Global Fund, everyone's familiar with, it's a really important time right now to be in engaging with the Global Fund because concept note development is still underway for this next funding cycle. This is showing some just a flowchart on the process of the Global Fund, right? So there's the Global Fund country allocations, which we're not gonna talk about. There's a supplemental module available on the course that's part of this that we can that you can look at. But funding requests are made via the CCMs. Those go up to technical review panels at the Global Fund Secretariat. The Global Fund Secretariat then enters a grant agreement with the prime recipients. And then you've got, you know, actual grant implementation that goes anywhere from 3 to 5 years, right? And it's important to understand this process because bureaucracy and the way the process works both uses and creates data, right? So when we look at, you know, the country allocations, they're utilizing epidemiological data, they're using disease information data, and they're communicating the political priorities of the board of the Global Fund. What the CCM communicates and generates data around is how are we proposing to spend Global Fund resources in the country? And who do we think is really important to get those resources? And just to say, you know, words in the grants mean a lot less than the budget lines themselves. And then you've got funding implementation when the grants flow down to the prime recipients and to who the subrecipients are. For what's going on right now, this is the calendar of funding cycle for the next, for this next cycle for the Global Fund. And I do want to open up here to hear a little bit more about the stage we're at for you're at in country with submissions of Global Fund grants. COVID has obviously changed a lot about the schedule and what's going to be happening. But I think we're interested to know where countries are in the Global Fund grant cycle, if anybody wants to introduce that. We're really interested in hearing where the CCM is in terms of preparing the grant and if you know when their agenda is and whether the engagement with civil society has been ongoing and how that's been being managed in the context of COVID. Does anybody from Tanzania want to just talk a little bit about where in the CCM we are?
Yes, this is Ati from Tanzania. Yes, we are in window, okay, Tanzania fall in window 2B, where the deadline for submission is 21st May. And we are currently in the writing process, and we share as well as other development partners. We received comments from the WHO, the Global Fund itself, as as well as the other development partners. So it's like we are working on the on the comment.
Oops, we lost you.
The internet. Can I go ahead?
Yep, go ahead.
Yeah, so we received, we are working on the comments that were raised by the development partners, meaning the WHO, the Global Fund itself, the UNAIDS, yeah, et cetera. So regarding the NSA, yes, we were involved from the beginning where we were asked to develop the priorities that we think are affecting, highly affecting the communities. So we came up with a list of interventions, and the NSA also fully participated in the development of the funding requests. Although we had a challenge following the unfolding COVID-19, some of us have been participating virtually, so we have not been to sit together as we normally, we usually do in the previous funding processes, but we have been participating visually, and yes, we have been able to see our priorities being incorporated in the concept note. So hopeful that the NSA priorities will also be funded by the Global Fund.
Great. It's good to hear that.
Thank you. I'm done.
Sorry.
Thank you.
So in the interest of time, I'm actually going to move on because we do want to get to demonstrating the Global Fund's website. It is part of the online module. There is a video there on this as well, but I think it's important for Austin to move on and show that sort of stuff. So this is here just on the role of CCMs. This is also covered in the module itself, in the online module. But we can talk about this more later. But I'm going to turn it over to Austin to really start talking about and demonstrating the Global Fund's website and our data visualization of it as well.
Thanks, and hi, everyone. Thanks for joining. As Brian sort of said, I'm just going to go through briefly sort of mapping the conversation that we had at the beginning of this about what types of data we want to keep an eye on. So the budget data, the expenditure data, and the monitoring and evaluation data, and how that looks at the Global Fund. And just really quickly, a couple of places where you can see that data. One of them will be the Global Fund's data portal, and one of them will be one that we've built, which is not officially public, but is hopefully a resource for you all nonetheless. Brian, maybe we could just go through the slides on yours briefly and then flip over to me. So I think we've already started talking through some of this, but the Global Fund does create all three of those dimensions of data that we were talking about earlier. The budget data is laid out in two places. The first one is what's under development right now, the concept notes that are put together in country and then submitted. The technical review panel will go through those and maybe suggest some revisions. But as part of that, there's a big budgeting exercise that goes on where the priorities are laid out and the gaps are identified. And then there's a final document, which is the grant agreements that sometimes have more information, sometimes have less information than the concept notes. But those are the final amounts that have been agreed at the end of that whole process. So the concept note is kind of like the first draft, and then the grant agreement is what is actually signed at the end of this whole process. We've seen the disbursements data already, which is kind of the most that we get in terms of expenditures from the Global Fund. Sometimes at a really high level, we see more details than just the HIV grant has spent this much. And sometimes in country, at the CCM level, you can get a lot more detail about what has actually been spent, because part of the role of the CCM in the whole Global Fund architecture is to be an oversight group. And so the CCM has the power to ask, and many have dashboards set up for how much of the funds have been spent, and maybe even drilled down to on your treatment budget or your prevention program, how much of that has been spent. And then finally, the monitoring and evaluation framework at the Global Fund is very different from what I think many folks who have engaged with the PEPFAR program are used to from that system. The PEPFAR system has indicators for every imaginable thing on the prevention program and on the treatment program and on testing. And the Global Fund has what they call key performance indicators, which are sort of much higher level. And we can also go through some reports that the Office of the Inspector General of the Global Fund releases to get another sort of measure of how the country grant is performing. And I think with that, I will try and take over sharing. And I'll start with the Global Fund's website. So as Brian said, and hopefully you should be seeing my screen now, as Brian said, this is linked to in the course, and there's a video going through this on the course, but this is the Global Fund's home for their data. It's far from perfect, as we'll see as we go through here. Quite a number of things are missing from that we might like to know about, but this is the starting point. If you just go to data.globalfund.org, you get this map, which shows all of their information over here on the right, information about their allocations. And if we zoom into one of the countries, we can start to see a little bit of the detail that we might want to know here. So let's just go to Tanzania to begin with. And over here on the left, you can see different ways to filter the data that they're showing us. The most obvious one for us is to limit just to HIV. The Global Fund also, as we all know, funds malaria and tuberculosis responses. But if we only want to look at grants that are addressing the HIV response, we can just click HIV. And some countries have a combined grant of TB and HIV, so we could both of them. And now we're only going to be looking at information for HIV and TB HIV. They have a measure of disease burden here, which is actually not very useful. It just tells you that Tanzania is in fact eligible for an HIV grant. But we can start to see how much money has been dispersed to HIV and TB HIV grants across the years. Down at the bottom, we'll get a big listing of all of the grants that have ever been in place for TB, HIV, or HIV in Tanzania. And I think the most relevant thing is often the grant that's on now. So instead of those that have been closed, maybe from 6 years ago, we just want to look at the one that's active right now. So if we do that, we can see that there are currently only two grants going on. There's this large one, which goes to the Ministry of Finance, and there's a smaller one, which is a TB HIV grant that goes to AMRAF. And if we want to start to know what some of those budgeting decisions that have been made, we can go into the grant here. I just clicked on the Ministry of Finance one, and we can see that information that Brian was showing earlier in terms of how much was signed in this grant, how much has been committed, and how much has gone out into the field for use. We can see what the rating on the grant is, which there's a little bit more information about that in the course. and how that rating has evolved over time. And down at the bottom, there's information including the grant agreement, which should be up to date, but in some cases it's not. So if I click on that, I'll get a document showing what is the agreement between the Global Fund and the Tanzanian government for the implementation of this grant. You can see this one's from 2015, so it's a little bit outdated. And we would want to get a little bit more recent information if we could. There's quite a number of other things on here, including some of the results data, which we'll talk about a little bit later. I think I lost my Tanzania. But if we click on the results tab, we can see in 2018 what the Global Fund is reporting for results on a number of their indicators. The thing to keep in mind with the Global Fund is that these indicators are actually, or these results are actually for the entire country. Global Fund is very clear in their framework, in their KPIs, that the results that they report are the result of a partnership, which is between them, between the PEPFAR, and between the government and country, and lots of other partners. So they're unwilling to sort of sort out even how many of the tests for these pregnant women that were at sites that are supported by the Global Fund or anything like that. So they're very high level results, but can still be a little bit useful. And just in the interest of time, there's like a lot of information on here, including more documents about grants in Tanzania, old funding requests, which are really useful to go through sometimes. And so encourage you to go through all of that and really take the time. You know, the point of the exercises that we put together is not just to have people do work, but to hopefully get some useful practice navigating this site and our own site, which I'll flip to in just 1 second. But do take the time to, like, in addition to the exercise, what you need to answer the questions in the exercise, like, just kind of spend some time figuring out what the site has to say about the Global Fund grants in your country. I'm having a little bit of trouble getting to the next tab. And I'll just go through this quickly. This is our, maybe I'm selected on some things. Sorry. This is also linked to in the, just clear it all. Okay, this is also linked to on the database, and there's a video going through some of this. But this is a resource that we put together with the intention of making public of all of the funding that the Global Fund has put out by country. And hopefully the idea of this was to be much finer in terms of what the funding was supposed to go to compared to what has been on the Global Fund database up till now. This is not public. This is data from the concept notes that were shared directly with us, but we actually don't have permission to go public with them. But I'll just show you a couple of the things that you can see on here. So if I click on Malawi this time, I can go down and see that the Malawi grant is mostly is split between HIV, TB, and malaria over the current cycle, which is 2018 to 2020. So let's just look at the HIV, TB, and let's just look at those 3 years, 2018 to 2020. If I go further down, I can start to see what, and this is what I was talking about before, some of the more specific things that the Global Fund is investing in within HIV and TB. So not just that they're spending hundreds of millions of dollars on the HIV response, but that this amount of money in 2020 is meant to go to treatment and care, $105 million, but also that they're supposed to be spending $5 million on prevention programs for adolescents. And this is, again, from the concept note, what the priorities that were laid out by the CCM We can start to map those here and ask questions about was that in the final agreement, and were those what are the programs that were set up as a result of this $5 million for adolescent prevention programs? We can see a little bit about where the money is going into commodities and what it's going for. In what we're seeing here, the bulk of that funding is going to pharmaceutical products. And we can also see who the partners are. So if I go all the way down to the bottom here, we can see each of the partners that are on the HIV-TB grant. And that includes not just the principal recipients. So in Malawi, there are two principal recipients. One of them is ActionAid International, and the other one is the Ministry of Health. But also, who are the people who are supposed to get some of those sub-grants? One of the things that's not very useful about the information that the Global Fund releases is sometimes it's basically, we gave $100 million or $200 million to the Ministry of Health to do HIV programming. And that's not actually what happened. Some of that money goes on to civil society organizations or to local health authorities to implement those programs. And the idea of this is that we can see, at least in the concept note, who was intended to implement some of these programs. So I think I will stop there. There's a lot more information on here, and again, encourage you to kind of spend time going through it and carefully do the exercises that will help you see a few more of the resources there. Ryan?
Yeah, I think, you know, that's basically what we're going to talk about today, as we're coming up on time. I guess what I would just say is open this back up to any questions or discussion that people want to have, any additional information we can provide as part of the course right now, or any questions on what we've presented and what Austin just shared at the moment. Again, there are, go ahead, Eric.
Hello, Brian. Hello.
Hello.
Can you hear me? Hello, Brian, can you hear me?
Yes, we can hear you. If you can speak up a little, it would be great.
Thanks very much for your explanation on Global Fund. My question is on the monitoring and evaluation, the indicators. There was a module, I think you talked about the module on the monitoring and evaluation where you have the performance indicators. My experience over the years has been that it's very hard for a country, like for civil society, to monitor the performance the indicators, how all the partners and resources are performing on those indicators. How best, in your view, how best is civil society? Thank you.
So I couldn't hear all of that, Eric, but I think what I got the question being is, you know, the performance data for Global Fund is very difficult to access in country. And so what is the best way for civil society in country to be monitoring the programming? And I think with Global Fund, it is very difficult. I think there's a couple of things to think through. One is, how do we engage with with the CCM, the country coordinating mechanism, as a civil society bloc, right? So how do we as civil society go in and start asking a lot more questions and making the CCM do the work and delivering sort of information back to communities and civil society that is needed? Because the CCM is the one entity in country that has sort of authority to really discuss a lot of those issues. And to report on a lot of those issues and the obligation to report on a lot of those issues. The other thing that I would say is this is also a reason, and we're going to have a couple of weeks on community-led monitoring about why it's important for civil society to be engaging on community-led monitoring, because the other systems and the metrics that are developed by the Global Fund or even by PEPFAR aren't always the ones that civil society would really want. And so our ability to utilize community-led monitoring to supplement the performance systems that are already in place by the Global Fund or by PEPFAR or domestic resources is really an important way to look at that. But it is challenging. I don't think there's an easy way to get access to regular data about the Global Fund. You could also approach the prime recipient, but they may or may not be willing to answer your questions, particularly when the prime recipient is the government itself. So, you know, part of the reason for making the database available in the way that we have with all the sub-recipients is to make those links between civil society and who the responsible actors are supposed to be in the country, so that civil society can go directly to those who are being funded to ask questions about what's happening in the program. So that would be my answer on that. I see a hand from Walter.
Hi.
Go ahead.
I just wanted to know, how, after knowing, you know, the expenditure levels, the expenditure allocation, so my interest is in knowing how we can then hold Global Fund and the implementers accountable once we affect and realize that we are off track. How do we then hold them accountable and make sure that we stick to agreed deliverables and efficient use of resources? Because unfortunately, if you look at sometimes how the Global Fund grants are implemented, sometimes it's fast track because of delays in disbursement and there's rush, people rushing to get charges. And sometimes people refer to who are not part of implementing.
To track the utilization and the efficiency. So I just wanted to know how we could do that as civil society.
Yeah, so I mean, I think this is one of the challenges, and this is where we get into the questions about how do we organize and do our advocacy strategies, whether that is, you know, we've got the information that we've got access to. Right, and we can make use of that information. And part of the way that we can make use of that information is by utilizing what we have to ask stronger and more probing questions, both of the CCM and of the implementing partners who are responsible. So we can do advocacy targeting the individual partners, right? Whether we're targeting sub-recipients, whether we're targeting the prime recipient, whether we're targeting the CCM, or whether we go ahead and target the Global Fund Secretariat itself saying, look, the CCM isn't listening to us. It's not, we are part of the civil society response in country. And we're not getting any responses when we demand answers. And then it's building advocacy campaigns, right? And then it's, how do we get the media involved? How do we communicate with the media to write stories about whether the Global Fund grant is proceeding in the way that we think it should? Writing about the gaps in service delivery that are supposed to be being filled by the Global Fund resources and why we don't think that those Global Fund resources are being allocated to the right things. The information is the information. It doesn't get us, it doesn't solve the problem, and it's not meant to solve the problem. That's where we have to get creative about the advocacy strategies as well, which we're going to be talking about as well as part of the course.
Thank you.
Were there any other questions?
Yes, I have one simple question, and I wanted to find out whether you have slides that compare budget data, expenditure data, and M&D data, so that one can easily make a relationship and say there is a relationship between the three elements and as the best for advocacy. Thank you.
I'm not entirely sure I understood that question. Austin, did you?
No, not 100%. Could you say that again, Hennington?
Yes, my question was, do we have, is there any we can get slides that compare budget data, expenditure data, and M&E, so that we can compare the three elements and confirm the value for money, if I say it like that?
Yeah, so I mean, this is where there's limitations in the data that are available from the Global Fund. So we have the website that they have, right? So there's the signed amounts, there's the committed amounts, and there's the dispersed amounts. We can get the budget is basically the signed amount. There's not great data further below that. So what we talked about in terms of there's deeper level data that we can get on the budget that comes directly from either the concept notes or the grant agreements. And that's in the database that AMFAR has built. It's also in the documents themselves when we look at the documents themselves for the grant agreements. But that really only tells us about the budget stuff. When we want to talk about expenditures, it is one of the gaps in the data that are not available for us to really look at, other than at that very high level of just what is the total amount of grant funding that has been actually dispersed to date. And that's a big problem and a big point of advocacy that we've been getting involved in, trying to advocate with the Global Fund that they improve those data reporting systems to civil society. And then I think, you know, we need to be more involved in also at the country level or civil society, and that's part of what this course is about, is putting pressure on the CCMs to start delivering that data to civil society in a much better way. And I think that first piece about transparency is actually where a lot of the advocacy really needs to focus. Because right now the Global Fund data are not very transparent. And that's a big problem for how we as civil society can use it. We can use what we've got access to really demand more, knowing that they have much more detailed data. So it's not a great answer, but that, you know, that's sort of where we're at, which is, you know, starting to develop those campaigns about more transparency from the Global Fund system.
Yeah, and I think just to add quickly, because I know we're over time already, but in terms of the question about value for money, it's a very important like way of thinking about this, right? We want to make sure that there's a fixed amount of money. We know that even with Global Fund and PEPFAR and domestic funding, there's still not enough money for the HIV response, right? So we want to make sure that the funding is being used in the most effective way that it possibly could be. I think from the information that we have from the Global Fund in particular, it's oftentimes really difficult to know whether that money is being used for the best purpose and in the most efficient way possible because of the lack of insight we have into how they're doing their own monitoring of the program, right? And so like Brian's saying, thinking about ways to be creative in the campaigns that we run and asking the right questions that are gonna help answer those questions is important and hard, and something that we hope by like having an understanding of what's currently available from the Global Fund and trying to ask some of those questions from that information, we can learn to ask some better, more specific questions and put pressure to say, well, how are you actually ensuring that you're making sure that this money is well spent and impacting the people that it needs to go to.
So we are well over time. So unless there's any other burning questions, I think we're going to close the webinar there. The recording of this, as well as the slides, both the audio and the video recording of this will be made available on the Engage website. Yeah, and that's it. Thank you everyone for joining.
Yeah.
And for participating.
Yeah, thank you. And just quickly, a reminder to please submit week one assignments if you have not done so already. We'd really like to go through those in one pass. And then the week two assignment, the due date is on Sunday. If you can get them in by then, that would be great. And next week, we're going to do a similar sort of exercise, but with PEPFAR, which probably a lot of us have a little bit more experience going through the types of data from PEPFAR. But that, again, kind of lets us go a little bit deeper into some of these ideas about budgeting and monitoring and evaluation, and think more carefully about, like, what do we still not know from PEPFAR. So looking forward to talking to everyone next week.
Thanks, all.
All right. Thank you.
Bye. Thank you.
Bye.